All right, welcome to the Free Thinkers Living Sober Group's workshop on varieties of secular experience, navigating AA in a secular way. I'm John R. I'm with the Free Thinkers Living Sober Group. Of course, on the last Sunday of each month, we have a different speaker, a panel of speakers sharing their experience, strength, and hope for about 30 minutes on some aspect of getting, staying, and or living sober in AA in a secular way. These workshops are recorded, and we post the audio on our website and the YouTube channel. You can check the chat for the links when we put them in there. By the way, for those of you who are interested in more from Ward Ewing, who was our guest last month on religionless spirituality, Joe C. has a podcast on Rebellion Dogs Radio, and we'll put the link for that in the chat. And during the speaker portion, the chat function is only going to be available. You can send chat messages to the hosts if you have a question or a problem, and we'll open it back up after our speaker has concluded his remarks. I haven't asked anybody, but would someone care to read the reading that we usually do on this? I'll post it on here from Bill W's address at the 1965 General Service Conference. Would someone like to volunteer to do that? Just unmute yourself and
I'll do it.
Thank you. Diane?
I'm Diane. I'm an alcoholic addict.
Hey, Diane.
Hi, Diane.
Hi.
In AA, we are supposed to be bound together in the kinship of a universal suffering. Therefore, the full liberty to practice any creed or principle or therapy should be a first consideration. Hence, let us not pressure anyone with individual or even collective views. Let us instead accord to each other the respect that is due to every human being as he or she tries to make his or her way towards the light. Let us always try to be inclusive rather than exclusive. Let us remember that each alcoholic among us is a member of AA, so long as he or she so declares. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Just a little reminder for us all, and especially for those who don't think we should be here. As free thinkers, we aspire to open-mindedness and to appreciating the sharing of others, particularly those with whom we disagree. So we ask only that everyone share without attempting to dissuade, argue, or disrespect anyone else or their beliefs. As a group, Free Thinkers Living Sober is secular. That is, we don't endorse or oppose any system of belief. We don't have any quarrel with any form of religion. And we also don't use any prayers of any kind in our workshops or meetings. Our only wish is to assure suffering alcoholics they can find sobriety in AA without having to accept anyone else's belief or having to deny their own. And after the speaker, we'll have open sharing for about an hour, and we'll open up the chat as well. We ask that you keep your microphones muted until everybody, until it's your turn to share. Please use the raised hand function so we can call on people in the order they raise their hands. And you're welcome to ask questions of the speaker if you want to, or just share your own perspective or your experience on the topic. Please do remember this is being recorded, so keep anonymity in mind. And without any further ado, it is a distinct honor and privilege for me to introduce our speaker today. He's the author of Modern 12-Step Recovery, which is I personally recommend it. I think it's an excellent piece of work. He's going to speak on the subject of working an effective program of secular recovery. And I'm happy and honored to introduce Glenn. Thank you for being here. It's all yours.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Appreciate the introduction. For those of you, again, my name is Glenn Rader. I live in the Detroit area, suburb of Detroit. I've been in recovery for 12 and a half years from drug addiction and alcohol and stinking thinking. My professional background happened to be in strategic planning and organization development. I'm a kind of corporate guy. And when I got myself straightened away And I turned my professional skills on this, started researching and writing to try to help people who are struggling with addiction. I'd had so much great help from people myself. I thought I would try to do something on where I could apply myself, and that was in the writing area. So I pursued that. I've got the book, the one book, and then I have a book for families called Stop, Things You Must Know Before Trying to Help Someone with Addiction. It comes from the other side of the fence, working at a treatment center on a volunteer basis, helping people out who had family members and friends struggling. So I work a secular program of recovery, but I do that within the AA framework. Most of the tables I sit at have mixes of, you know, agnostics, atheists, Buddhists, Christians, and various parties of the part, but we make it work, and the discussions are always very solid discussions. I only have a few slides to share with you today, and it's on the subject of working an effective program of secular recovery, and I'm bringing a bit of a message to the secular community with what I'm going to share with you today. So let me open up the PowerPoint here, start from the beginning. There we go. I pilfered the logo for here, the brain with the light bulb. It's from the front of the book. I pilfered that off it because it's one of my favorite logos. It has to do with lighting your brain up, getting a new set of things. Anyway, let's start with this. Rather than talking about an effective program of secular recovery initially, let's talk about what makes up an effective program of transformation and change. Number one, effective programs of transformation and change, they study and practice a set of principles that result in desired goals. That's just, if you look across most programs of significant change and transformation. Number two, they have a mentoring and facilitation function by people who have firsthand knowledge of the subject matter. And third, and importantly, it reinforces the principles through ongoing affiliation and support of peers. So what we're talking about here is any major program of change and transformation will have those components. In our case, in the case of the alcoholic and drug addict, it has to do with transforming so that you get long-term abstinence, so that you have a cognitive behavioral change going on. That is shedding the stinking thinking and replacing it with some solid day-to-day mechanisms. And last and most important, you get a great quality of life out of it, a new freedom and a new happiness. And so those are the characteristics of a good program of change. Now, putting your biases aside for the a spirituality component, the religious component of Alcoholics Anonymous, let's take a look at Alcoholics Anonymous in that context of what I just said. First of all, they have a set of principles that they work on, that AA works on, that have to do with recognition of your problem, seeking outside resources, looking at yourself with an inventory, changing yourself from a character standpoint, and so forth, making amends, participating in the community. Now, for the secular population out there, there's been secular translations and facilitations of this going on for 80 years. I mean, the people sitting here are not, you know, we are not new to secular. There have been articles written 60 years ago and 70 years ago about making it more neutral and less religious. And there's people that have done translations along the way. As a matter of fact, what I'll suggest to you is the mentoring function in AA today and over the last 80 years has largely been one of helping a person do that translation into whatever their frame of reference is. For me, I had a secular translation done by an agnostic participant in AA. When I say a translation, just helping me embrace the steps in a secular manner, look past the religion aspect of it. So what Alcoholics Anonymous has first is they have the set of principles. They have the mentoring going on. And last and most important, again, a reinforcement process that involves the AA meetings and other activities. Now, Bill and Bob and company back in the 30s, they didn't know exactly what they were structuring at the time. And in fact, the sponsoring and much of that occurred after that as AA developed over time. But one thing they did, and this is part of the research that went into my book because I cover the cognitive behavioral aspects of AA in the book, are that what Bill and Bob and company did was put together a set of steps that walks a person through a cognitive behavioral change. They are going through a process in steps. If you pick, somebody is not muted there. I'm getting some feedback on this end. Okay. What Bill and Bob discovered and put together was a sequence of events that works a person through that cognitive behavioral change, recognizing the issue, turning yourself over to other resources, et cetera. If you do a comparison to today's modern cognitive behavioral therapy, there's a lot of overlap. But they, at the time, were just working on stinking thinking, the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. But the reason, one of the reasons that the program's lasted as long as it has, despite its non-secularity, is the fact that it embraces all three of these principles of that transformation. And so it wouldn't have stood up without that. It wouldn't have stood up without the sponsoring and mentoring. And if it didn't have the meetings and the other activities, the steps themselves wouldn't have been enough. So I look at it as quite a successful achievement. In my frame of reference, though, from a secular standpoint, I think that a lot could be done by AA in terms of making it recognize the diversity in the modern audience. And that's one of the reasons for writing the book, too, the major reason. So that's why AA has had the success, despite that. There have been many, many programs of recovery that have come and gone over that 80 years, believe me. And the ones that didn't were offshoots and things that didn't have this background. Let's look at the secular recovery landscape today. What's out there today? This is also comes from some perusing and research and work in the treatment centers and that. You have actual programs of secular recovery. And these where they're working secular principles, either secular versions of the 12 steps. Those are actually the best because they kind of mirror up with what people are seeing in the non-secular. But they have principles, they have mentoring, and they have reinforcement going on, meaning the real good programs of secular recovery have all those dimensions to it. Now, just like AA, there's other things that go on out there. Special topic sessions like the one today, working an effective program of secular recovery. There's a lot of that goes on in AA, in the Buddhist community of AA, and other areas. What's also in the secular landscape today are regularly scheduled open recovery topic meetings. We started one in Detroit. It's a secular recovery session, and we draw topics out of a hat. We have a box that we draw topics out of. And so every week we're talking about a topic. It can be one of many things, including in that box are the 12 steps, the secular version of the 12 steps. And last, what's out there in the secular landscape, and this holds true of AA as well, is coffee clutches and general bullshit sessions. You know, these are things where people just get together. They declare them to be recovery meetings, but they're largely talking about, you know, whatever they feel like talking about and you know, bullshitting. So in summary here, what you have out there are programs of recovery, secular recovery, special topics, topics of choice, and general non-recovery discussions, the bullshit sessions. But what's important here is that, and I'm guilty of this as well, is that in making something secular and this is the central point of this, in making secular recovery, what people do is throw out some of the major components of what solid recovery is. In other words, if I look at secular recovery out there, at least what I'm familiar with, you see much more of these things going on. Special topic discussions, topic of choice meetings, general not, and these are all important complements to a recovery program. Like what we're doing today is just wonderful. And they're great complements to recovery, particularly for people who are in advanced recovery, let's say, and want to try to get onto some new topics and enrich their lives with broader recovery. But what I see out there is much more of this going on and many fewer programs of secular recovery. And this, where we're shortchanging recovery there is particularly to the newcomer, because there's two kinds of newcomers out there. I mean, there are secular newcomers like I was, but there are also people in the landscape that are looking for the easier, softer way. They don't want to work a program of recovery. They don't really feel like going through a set of steps or working with a sponsor or working with a mentor. So they're not turned off by AA, by the religious language necessarily. There's people looking for the easier, softer way. And what I found in some of the sessions that I've been involved in, like the ones that are circled in red, that's where they're showing up. We're getting people that are showing up there and they believe that it is a program of recovery. For many of you, attending this session is part of your program of recovery. So what I'm leaving you with, a message for the secular community and the message to Glenn as a part of this, is don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Just the bottom line. As you're working to try to promote secular recovery, if you can, at least adapt a set of non-secular or of secular steps and work through those steps as part of the program. You don't have to be doing that all the time. I attend regular AA meetings. I attend secular meetings. I do work at the treatment center with the inpatients once a month. So that's basically my message, is trying to promote secular recovery and work secular recovery, but don't throw out the components of recovery that make recovery successful and transformation in an individual successful. And that's what I have for you today. I will take any questions you like, and we could just pursue a general discussion around the subject.
Thank you, Glenn.
Thanks, Glenn.
Well, okay, I'll start with a question. Then what would you say constitutes a good program of recovery that is not failing to, or is not throwing the baby out with the bathwater? That's a softball question, but a good question.
Well, that's a good softball. I think it's good to lead off with that. The ones that I see that are the most effective, and when I say most effective, this is for the newcomer walking in the door and the person who's got some background in recovery and wants to participate in mentoring and other things, they would look, act, and behave like the AA meeting structure of the day and the AA structure of sponsorship and things like that. But what they're doing is working off a set of secular steps. And even, for example, in the back of the book, one of the things, this will sound self-promoting, but in the back of the book, there are the traditional AA readings reworded for secular recovery. In other words, how it works, the promises, and things like that. So a person could, within a meeting, transition a meeting to a modern 12-step recovery meeting pretty easy. So the effective program of secular recovery would start out with that framework, But then do the other things like we're doing today, having the secular discussions around individual topics and things like that. But only a program made up of these special discussion sessions or special topic groups or general coffee clutches and, you know, those sessions would not be a program of recovery.
Great. Well, thanks. I thank you for showing up. I hope we have a lot of questions. We're going to open up the room for sharing, and some people have already started using the raised hand function. So you'll unmute yourself when I call on you. We're also going to open up the chat so that you can put things in the chat if you prefer to do that. Let me just do that real quickly.
Maybe you could put me in gallery. Oh, I can put myself in gallery view. There we go. Okay.
And then remember, it is being recorded, so be sure to keep that in mind when you introduce yourself. You should be able to save the chat file. I'm going to put a bunch of stuff in the chat file, like the Tisnua is doing a New Year's Eve marathon, that kind of thing. So I'll put that in the chat. You should be able to save it or copy and paste it for future reference. And I will be putting a little background on me that will tell you when you're getting close to being time out. If it goes to yellow, you've been there, you've been talking for 3 minutes. If it goes to red, it means maybe you need to let somebody else talk for a little bit. Let's see, what else? Is there some other business I needed to share? I did want to mention just quickly that Freethinker's next presentation at the end of January is going to feature some of our members talking about the Big Book and secular AA. So how they use it or don't use it and that kind of thing. So hopefully you'll tune in for that as well. And so having said that, I'm going to shut my mouth and ask for Al to start us off. Al?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks. Thanks, John. Thanks, Glenn. I bought your book and I've read your book, which is a good thing if we have a discussion here. But man, I don't know. I'm sort of on the other end of whatever you call it, looking at secular sobriety. Seems to me, just in a discussion, you're bringing some of the baggage of AA that a lot of us are trying to get away from. You know, at least I was when I came here, and totally ignoring. We talk about the success of AA, and there's a limited success in AA, very limited. If we look at the world population and the people that come to AA and get sober, it works fine for some people. But I have to look at my own situation. When I needed help desperately, the last place in the world I wanted to go was AA. You know, and there are hundreds of thousands of people, and that's a very low number, that feel the same way, will never go to AA. Never go to AA. You know, they just, it's not up here, no matter how much they're suffering. And there are hundreds of thousands of people who go to AA and walk out that door and never come back after one or two meetings. And we say, like, well, let's put aside the religiosity. I don't think we can quite do that, but I'm trying to get to a question here, but that's what I'm trying to get to. But as long as I got the green, I think I'll keep talking. I could talk for hours on this, but you know, you're talking about the AA thing is put the blame on the person. You know, they're defiant, they're selfish, they're self-centered, they're not ready. Instead of doing a little inventory on AA, and this isn't AA bashing, you know. Religion thinks they're above criticism, or not quite the word, but critical examination. And AA seems to be falling right into that. We're above critical examination. And I don't believe that for a minute. And just where did the 12 steps come from? How come there's 12? We can go, like I said, I can talk for hours about this stuff. But in your book, get to the question, you talk about modern 12-step program is the name of the book, not modern 12 steps. It's modern 12-step program, which is interesting, by the way.
And I think 12-step recovery.
Recovery. I'm sorry. You talk about 12-step recovery, not just 12 steps, or modern 12 steps. And tremendous need for the book. I mean, if I'm just going to sponsor somebody, I'm going to give them your book instead of the big book. And eventually they can read the big book on their own. But tremendous need for it. And I don't know. You make a lot of comparisons with... you talk about the 12 steps, and it's like when I'm at a secular meeting, people are talking about the steps. Well, what the hell steps are they talking about? You know, and in your book, I'm assuming you're talking about the modern 12 steps all the way through the book. And you know, you just...
Exactly.
Okay, right. That's great. Now, I can make that comparison with CBT and REBT and all those things. Mm-hmm. That's very easy to do. But I cannot go there with the original 12 steps. I think that's a big failing of those steps. Anyway, I'm in the yellow, and you answered the question. So, but I'm confused, especially at meetings when I hear people talk about the steps. And I wish they would clarify if they're talking about what the hell steps are talking about. But again, I think we need critical examination even in secular AA. You know, we would have millions of people coming in this program if we called it secular recovery. You know, so that's just my opinion. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Al.
Yeah, a couple of things. There's some research. There's a book called It Works If You Work It. It's actually called If You Work It, It Works. And in there, that's one of the books where they've done research on the effectiveness of various programs. What I'm talking about here is not just the AA structure. It happens that the AA structure parallels a lot of effective transformation programs. You know, it has those components that I mentioned. They do need to, and I've had discussions with a member of the General Services Board in New York about the fact that if they could just modify the steps and, you know, mop them up, kind of like I've got them in the book, that you could plug those into the existing framework, in the existing transformation framework, and it would start to work pretty good. But they are a long way from doing that, Al. They're a long way. And second, another thing that comes out of the research is a lot of programs are effective, can be effective, that have those components if the person engages in the program. They know from research that the major failing is from people walking out the door, not just that they're turned off to the language, but they get in there and they don't want to work a program. They came there for various reasons. So they know, for example, that facilitated Alcoholics Anonymous, smart recovery, if it's done right, and other mechanisms, CBT and other mechanisms can work for recovery from addiction if the person jumps in and works a program of recovery. And so that's an interesting area for me. And there is a lot of baggage that AA carries around still, and they need to shed it. And that's one of the reasons for writing the book, to help shed it.
Thank you. Thanks, Glenn. I thought that, Kenji, didn't you have your hand up? Did you change your
mind? Yes, I did, actually. Hi, I'm Kenji, human in recovery. I actually just put it down because... I think, Glenn, you kind of just answered one of my questions, which was in your talk, you mentioned new people coming into AA wanting this easier, softer way. And I was wondering if what you meant by that is just have God do it for you. But I guess So I guess that's still one of my questions. I think I know your answer already from what you just said, but beyond that, it seems to me one of the big shortcomings of secular AA is people coming in and some people, probably the minority of people, just not wanting to work a program at all, just come to meetings and
right on.
And you know, say no steps, and other people who say, you know, that their picture of what the 12 steps in the traditional 12 steps tell you to do is just have God do it for you, which is really not my understanding at all. I have to admit, I bought your book, but I have not read it yet. I'm definitely going to have to move it up to the top of my virtual pile.
Good, that's what I like.
Anyway, I guess I made my point and asked my question. What do you think? I would love us to be able to come together more. I kind of see secular AA as widening the gamut of AA rather than being an alternative to classic AA, which obviously has worked for millions of people. I disagree with Al that it's a failure, because there are millions of people that, and here in San Francisco where I live, AA is a very vital program. It's I definitely prefer secular AA on Zoom around the world, but pre-pandemic, the problem was getting people, you know, finding enough seats for people in the rooms, and largely young people. It's a much, much younger program than what I see on Zoom here, where the demographic skews much older. Thanks.
Very good points. And I think my view of the entire thing is that secular AA is an opportunity to widen AA, to throw a broader net out, which is my discussion I had. I did have a discussion with a member of the General Services Board about the diversity issue. You know, we're not talking here about making it a non-secular program. We're talking about widening the net to make it a program that recognizes increasing diversity, spirituality, ethnicity, culture, not just getting the religiosity out of it, but broadening the net. And that's the view I take on it. I'm out there, I'm not promoting. The only words I use, I think I use the word secular in the, you know, introduction, and I mention religion in the first few pages, and after that, it's never mentioned again. It's approached from a diversity standpoint. So I'll leave it at that, but I agree. I mean, that's the goal. The goal is to broaden the net, not to replace it. And by then, by doing that, you can leverage the existing AA mutual support network and sponsor structure and things like that that's in place. Hell, we got 1,300 meetings a week here in the Southeast Michigan area, pre-pandemic anyway. I think it's actually increased. So I'll leave you with that.
Thanks, Glenn. And thank you, Kenji. Jacinta, do you care to unmute?
Oh, yes. Hi. My name is Jacinta. I'm from Cincinnati. I'm very grateful to be here today. Glenn, thank you. I enjoyed your talk, and I've seen your book. I've read it. And I agree with you wholeheartedly that we have to be very careful not to throw out the baby with the bathwater. I was born a free thinker, but I developed a problem with alcohol. And so when I walked in the doors of AA 38 years ago, it was, even though I was raised in a staunch religious family, I'd become an atheist by about the age of 15 or 16. But I recognized some of the important features of the communal spirit, if you will. I don't even really use that word spirit, but ritual. I grew up with a lot of ritual, and I recognized some emotional growth and development that can come from that. So that was the reason I was able to maintain, although I did not stay sober right away. I don't have 38 years of sobriety. I've got almost 13. But but I was always able to maintain my personal beliefs as an atheist in the program of AA. Where I do have some disagreement with your work is in the strong emphasis on the cognitive behavioral aspect. Now, I can see that certainly AA historically has adopted, without really being conscious of it, these cognitive behavioral principles. But I think one of the biggest mistakes ever made was from the transition from the third to the fourth edition, when they removed the story, "He Thought He Could Drink Like a Gentleman," because somewhere on page either 217 or 219 of the third edition, the third alcoholic getting sober asked Dr. Bob if he thought this was really more of a moral illness or a physical right. one. Mm-hmm. And the doctor said he really thought it was more of a spiritual or a moral illness. And that's right out of the doctor's mouth. That's right out of Dr. Bob's mouth. So my point is this, there are a lot of free thinkers in AA who do not ascribe to the disease concept. My bookshelves have been filled with the works of Dr. Thomas Saws for many years. You may have heard the name Saws.
Right.
He systematically, as a psychiatrist, undermined the whole theoretical foundation of psychiatry. But more importantly, he showed, and I think that what I've witnessed in 40 years, is the voracious appetite of the medical profession to dominate this topic of addiction. And I just want to say that there are free thinkers in AA who do not ascribe to the disease concept, and that if we pay attention to the more recent works of people like Dr. Vincent Folletti and the profound discoveries made in the ACE study, which it was the largest healthcare study ever done in the United States, we're really looking at a different foundational framework from where addiction comes from. And it often comes from early childhood trauma. And even Besser van der Kolk acknowledges that cognitive behavioral therapy doesn't really address that very well, that we have to look at things from a different perspective to address these issues of addiction. So anyway, I didn't want to go on and on, but I do want to just say that I think you're completely right about not throwing out the baby with the bathwater. We need a framework. And when I go to meetings where there are a lot of different special topics, I feel sorry for the newcomer because they're not getting a foundation in these important structural things that you're saying should be in a program of recovery. So thank you again for being here. And thank you all. And I'll pass with that.
Thank you, Jacinda.
Thanks, Jacinda.
There has been 80 years of research on the subject of allergy of the body and obsession of the mind. Those are my words, of the genetic, physical, and psychological components of it. And there's a lot of different opinions, and there's people that have their own versions of the world. And I think it's worth reading all of them because we all progressed in the understanding of the subject. I am from the school that there's both a physical and a psychological aspect of it in different mixes for different people. And some people need it addressed in different ways. Some people need heavy psychotherapy to get through it. Some people can go to a few AA meetings a week and get through it. I've done therapy, I've done AA, and that's what worked for me. But thanks for the input. It's good stuff.
Thanks, Glenn. Tim from Ottawa.
I'm Tim from Ottawa, east of Chattanooga. Glenn, I appreciate what you said today, and I have been regularly participating in Dr. Berger's Thursday night,
8
p.m. Eastern meetings. I know you've participated in those, and I appreciate all the wonderful contributions you've made.
Thank you.
Questions and comments in those meetings.
I guess a
little bit following up, it's kind of a follow on to what the previous questioner said. And I was somewhat surprised this week with the remarks by Herb Kagan that he kind of was beginning to move towards the direction of not so much thinking of step 11 and this spiritual awakening, but calling it an emotional sobriety transformation, I think is somewhat along the lines of what he said. So I don't necessarily see that transformation as a moral change, but it's certainly a radical different way of thinking than what most human beings seem to acquire through their life, particularly those that have a tendency towards addiction. So what are your thoughts on that as to how does this whole issue of emotional sobriety fit into the 12 steps? And do you kind of see it the way way Herb Kagan was stating on Thursday night about that we should be thinking of it more along those lines of emotional sobriety and this different way of thinking, more so than attributing words like spiritual or moral to it?
Good.
Thanks, Tim.
The Alan Berger, Dr. Alan Berger, has made a great contribution in the area of emotional sobriety. And Alan would tell you, I think, that he views the subject of emotional sobriety as stage two or advanced recovery. It's definitely a place that I recommend all of you who you're not familiar with the work. 12 Smart Things to Do When the Booze and Drugs Are Gone is just wonderful work. It's all secular. It opens up with Bill's letter on the next frontier. But he would tell you that the emotional sobriety topic is an extension of the foundation recovery, meaning you should be working through a program of recovery. And as a matter of fact, for the last probably 10 or 15 weeks, he has been going through step by step, reading the step, the non-secular original step, and then talking about emotional sobriety within the context of the step, because he views it as a way of expanding your knowledge of it, not replacing the program of AA with emotional sobriety. It's wonderful, by the way. If you haven't read 12 Smart Things to Do When the Booze and Drugs Are Gone, it's definitely worth a read. He's got some other 12 Smart Things books out there, but the one called 12 Smart Things to Do When the Booze and Drugs Are Gone is a great book, short book with a great message.
Yeah, and he also had, of course, his newest book is on emotional sobriety, which is also a pretty good book. Temple.
Hey, thank you. Temple alcoholic, recovering alcoholic, also a recovering Catholic, just to mention that in there. Glenn, thank you so much for being here. And I don't know if crosstalk or not, but Kenji, if you're still here, thank you for joining our meeting. I'm a regular at the secular meditation meeting, which is 9 o'clock California time every day. And Kenji popped in and said, hey, come to this. And I was so excited because I just got your book, Glenn, a couple of weeks ago and read it. And what I wanted to ask or kind of bring up, when I went through the steps the first time, I guess in traditional AA, I had some problems with, you know, step two and step three, but I had a great sponsor and he really helped me rationalize.
Yes.
Get through it. You know, so I'm not, you know, looking up at the sky daddy, like, hey, help me out here. Like, how am I going to like really think about this? And then my other problem or issue or concern was step six and seven, especially in the big book, where it's a paragraph and a half. And I think in working a program of recovery, one of the key elements there, and I think we're all in agreement, is if alcohol is but the symptom, what is really the issue here are my index of maladjustments, my character defects, those things that have, you know, pushed me to use alcohol as an avoidance, to find oblivion, to escape, what have you. And I was just so thankful to come across secular AA, particularly during the pandemic. And I mean, just wonderful rooms like this. So thank you everybody for putting this room together and all the other rooms that I go to and just am able to sit with people that really kind of get the conflict with the non-secular, like, you know, this deity who I'm just going to hand everything over to. And as I worked through some of the secular approaches, I stumbled upon Jeffrey Munn's book. And that was really the first time I had seen something that actively took step six and seven and created it, made it a part of the program So you're not just like glancing over this sort of, you know, list. And I was hoping you could sort of elaborate some more, because you do some similar things in your 6 and 7. But if you could elaborate a little bit more beyond what you have in the book regarding, I believe, like the very specific importance of those two steps. Thank you so much for being here again.
Thanks, Temple. A 6 and 7, in terms of my work and in terms of putting together a set of steps that that work for a secular person, but stay true to the original intent of things. 6 and 7 is a real challenge, because those two, you're thrown to the Lord for assistance, or for a what I'll call a characteroctomy, to take your defects of character, and you're definitely thrown to the Trinity for the characteroctomy. And in terms of translating those, the real work there was putting them back in your lap, putting them back in your lap to do the work, because the, my translation of it would be, became entirely ready to make changes in our character. There's no outside entity that's going to do a characteroctomy on me. And number 7, began making changes in our thinking and behavior with humility and honesty. So those took a great deal of translation. It turns out that 11's the most difficult, that I had to do the most research on to do it. But for 6 and 7, they are very challenging. And even to the newcomer who even embraces a metaphysical being, a higher power coming out of Buddhism or Christianity or anything, for any of those people, even 6 and 7 are a challenge, because they can't see it. They can't see this. Now, you'll get the occasional person, and it's already been mentioned here, who is waiting to have it extracted, and they like the notion of somebody else doing the work. But there's a rare person with long-term sobriety that I know who has sat around and waited for 6 and 7 to operate in the mechanism that it's laid out. So I really appreciate your remarks there.
Thanks, Glenn. I was seriously considering writing a book about 6 and 7 for some of those same reasons. Brian.
Now let me unmute there. Thanks so much, John, and thanks to Joe and his Beyond Belief group there in Toronto on underwriting this and paying the Zoom cost. My late father was a physician, so I default to formalities. So I first want to say, Dr. Rader, it's an honor to join you today. Just quickly, when you mentioned the allergy thing before, I hadn't planned on saying any of this. I chased down my, well, this is 2005 from living sober. And it's, which chapter are we on? It's on page 68. I mean, not for nothing. Living sober, it reminds me of what Mark Twain said about a classic. The book that everybody talks about, but no one has read. Okay, it's chapter 26, Be Wary of Drinking Occasions. It says, usually I'm allergic to it seems acceptable. Technically, in strictly scientific terms, alcoholism is not a true allergy. The experts now inform us. So, when I first saw in the big book, I guess the doctor's opinion about allergies, that makes absolutely zero sense to me. I don't find myself drawn to a patch of poison ivy wishing to roll around in it because it makes me high. So it never really made sense to me. So that's it. Okay, Dr. Rader, what I meant, your opening slide says working with an effective program of recovery. Now, I assume by invoking effective, you indeed can support this word by data you derived as a licensed and credentialed mental health practitioner or psychotherapist. And it's so.
But first of all, I need to let you know, I'm not that. As part of my introduction, my background's in strategic planning and organization development.
Oh.
All my knowledge of cognitive behavioral therapy came from 2 years of independent study.
Oh, Okay. And
but that's okay. I like the doctor. I do like the doctor title. I'll take it going forward. I may be able to use that to my advantage. But
well, to me, it's no disrespect. It is something that's earned. My father earned it. So
I don't use it.
Withdraw that. And I'll gladly call you Glenn and I'm Brian. So I understand, you're a hobbyist. I mean, I'm exposed to, I've been exposed to CBT as a consumer, if you will, of psychotherapy. It actually was a licensed physician who said, alcohol is a central nervous system depressant. You've got a history of periodic depression, major depressive disorder.
Right.
D5. We're talking science and rationality here. Maybe drinking isn't such a good idea. Oh, for what it's worth, by the time I got to page 68, you talk about recovery. It's kind of an open-ended thing. I don't know. Even the big book said recovered. So by 68 pages here, we can keep going. Living Sober mentions recovered, past tense, 68 times. CBT, I think, is important. I didn't think I would. And anyway, let's cut out the filibustering. Before you published this book, I'm sure you collected data on the effectiveness of these, of your program.
I'm not okay. Number one, I'm not advocating a program in my book. I'm not advocating.
That's who really cares. I'm sure you have.
I'm letting you know. I rely totally on the historical effectiveness of the AA program for people who are fully invested in it. And what I'm attempting to do is, like Kenji said, throw the net wider so it doesn't reject people who are walking in the door who don't have the particular perspective of the spirituality that AA embraces.
How do you empirically measure fully invested?
I have to rely on the research on that, and what they say is fully invested. If you look at some of the research on the subject, it's people who participate in learning the principles of whatever program it is, Smart Recovery, AA, or whatever. They attend the meetings and sessions on a regular basis as prescribed by that program. And then they go out with this is the real important part of it, is an action program of implementing and making change in themselves so that their lives change.
Okay, just quickly here, I'll close and shut up. The American Medical Association, physicians, this is 2005. The inside title page of Living Sober, treatment primarily involves not taking a drink. There's science, there's medicine, there's modernity, and this book doesn't even mention the 12 steps, and got it. And I understand the
if they say it's largely involves, if they actually say it largely involves not taking a drink, they're full of shit. And I'll take that spot. You can represent me everywhere because there's a much broader base of research on the medical side and on the psychology side regarding recovery from addiction. And if they're really saying that it just involves not taking a drink, I can't understand it. I wouldn't understand it. So
thanks, Brian. But let's move on now to Mike. Mike?
Yes. Thank you, John. I'm Mike G. And Glenn, I appreciate your time and elucidation of the points in the book. I also have the book and have read it, and I enjoy it very much. I love the particular, I mean, I think folks that know me know I'm a collector of a lot of different things and a lot of books about, you know, this fucking thing, whatever it is, you know, and so I love hearing the different perspectives because I also, like a lot of folks, you know, thought, I guess it was told to me by some who thought, you know, mistakenly that there was kind of only one way to do this, blah, 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 for many, many, many years. And, you know, in the past decade or so have, you know, come to find that, you know, there's as many ways or more ways probably of working this. And there are individuals doing it. I love that you say, because I think it's interesting too, about the efficacy of, you know, working a program, whatever that might be. Because I, like others too, I'll say the same thing. It is kind of cool to be in secular AA where kind of you don't have to do anything until maybe your ass is on fire, and then maybe you do have to do something. And that's cool, because that's really no different than, you know, traditional program, you know. So, you know, I think that's hilarious, actually, that it works the same way in both situations. But I also agree about not throwing out the baby with the bathwater, because what the 12 steps, for me anyway, they're a nice package that encapsulates like some kind of thing that if you sort of do it in some sort of way, you're going to change. And for me, that is the essence of what my recovery has been all about, is changing and willingness to change and continuing to change. And that phrase they talk about, the, you know, the same person will drink again. And you know, for me, that is, you know, I believe that for myself. And then with respect to 6 and 7, you know, it is a lot to unpack for someone that isn't into the God thing at all. And I think for me, you know, it's like an unpacking of two, where we come to believe that a power greater than ourselves or whatever, or basically for me, the essence of that is come to believe that change is possible or that there's a way out. That's what it means, regardless of how that occurs. I don't have a higher power, but I've done things differently and, you know, things changed and I changed and now I don't want to drink. Go figure. But I think that like 6 and 7 are kind of like a encapsulation of that, where there's like 6 is sort of coming to believe in a sense of like, I guess this will work. 7 is sort of continuing to work the program. And as opposed to asking somebody to take them away, you know, it's a matter of that. I think trusting the process is the way that I would put it. And it's, I always like to go to that Karate Kid, you know, scene where he's doing the wax on, wax off thing. He doesn't know why he's doing it, but he's doing it because Mr. Miyagi told him to do that. And then what happens is when he needs it, that stuff comes in handy. And I really like the way that kind of, you know, so for me, that's how that works. The change, understanding, reinforcement. I really appreciate all that you have laid out here.
Thanks. I appreciate that. On one of your points, Sarah, and this is coming out of Hazelden, Betty Ford, that group, and also SAMHSA, which is the, you know, U.S. Substance Abuse and Health People, that across the board, and it relates to what you said, Mike, is the person embracing it themselves, embracing change, and being self-directed is the number one factor in success in recovery, in addiction recovery. If they haven't, and what William James, our friend from the Big Book, Varieties of Religious Experiences, William James would say, to get to that point, you have to reach a desperation. You have to become a desperate individual long enough to turn your ego off to embrace change. And if you can do that and walk through the steps and embrace that change, or go to smart recovery and embrace change, you know, but just embrace it and go in there full force. That's what Betty Ford and Samson Company would tell you is the key to success.
Thanks, Lee. And, Glenn, there's a question in the chat too. Xander, do you want to ask that question? Do you want to unmute and ask that question yourself? I think she's still here.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I'm sorry. There's a lot in the chat. So yeah.
She asked.
I was just, sorry. Yeah. Xander here. Hi.
Hi.
I was just asking. Hi. Thank you very much for all the work that you've done in your share today. I really appreciate it. I was just wondering, can addiction, isn't that it's very much like obsessive compulsive disorder?
Oh yeah.
Like, but, yeah, just what's your take on that?
Well,
as opposed to like CBT.
Well, I don't have a lot of background in obsessive compulsive disorder, and they actually can use CBT to get past some of that as a disorder. One's the disorder and one's the, I won't say cure, but one's the way out. But I know I'm an obsessive compulsive person. I was that way very much about my addiction. you know, I would go after various ways of trying to address it. It wouldn't work. So I would go after the next bigger thing to address it, all the time lying to myself. And that's all obsessive compulsive behavior. I'm just obsessed about not quitting, really. I'm obsessed with trying to turn myself into a recreational OxyContin user, you know, recreational addict. I joke about that, but, you know, if I hear the term recreational drinker, I think, well, how about recreational OxyContin? But I was obsessive about that, trying to fix myself and not actually address my addiction. So that's a little bit of background I have there. But obsessive compulsive behavior and addiction share a lot of space together. I did, one of my therapists I saw, he's an addiction professional, and he took me down that discussion a little bit. You know, more down the space of me trying to do better all the time and prove myself to people, and it not yielding me what I wanted it to. So the obsession is chasing that next thing and, you know, people pleasing and things like that. So.
Thanks. Jeb, you're up.
Thanks, John. My name is Jeb, and I'm a grateful recovered addict alcoholic. And thank you, Glenn, for joining the debating society, at least for this hour, which is something I try to avoid because there are so many views about all of this. And, you know, I do appreciate a lot of the thoughts in your book. But one thing that bothered me from the very beginning is there's no way that 12 simple sentences could describe the process that Bill said the book, their experience, was going to describe.
Agreed.
And that drove me crazy when I came to AA, because people reading that introduction to how it works, like that's the whole gospel truth, and all you have to do is make up your own way to do those things. And that's why I had to find someone else in early sobriety to start reading the book, and especially pages 60 through 88, where I've started taking inventory of being convinced we are now at step 3, and I've learned to do that for the last 40 some years, and it's so important to me. And then also, I was told that I should not read that book without a dictionary. So I was certainly confused when I read Bill's 12 step, because it wasn't they, it was he. It was his, what he was doing, supposedly, or professing, when he used the word principles in the 12 step. And of course, that word means course of action. That means to mean that the actions behind each one of those steps is what is important, and I need to try to incorporate it into my life. Mm-hmm. And that meant for me also that I had to reword those steps so they reflect what I'm doing when I'm working with someone, rather than what Bill claimed that he was doing, which is very, very confusing if we read his story and we read the first 4 chapters and everything else.
All right.
It, you know, somebody needs to, and I think you're trying to, and others have tried to connect the dots of the wisdom, the eternal truths or whatever that apply to us. Now, I have no word problem with the word allergy if I use my 1939 dictionary, because the understanding of diction of allergy is quite different today from what it was then. And it was a sensitivity to a substance or whatever. And so, but I do recognize, and this is what I heard at my first AA meeting, that phenomenon of craving. I understood that for my last 10 or 15 years of drinking, that if I started, I wouldn't stop. And that phenomenon of craving may be related also to my obsessive compulsive disorder. I don't really care. But that, you know, that's so important. So I try to stay out of arguments about the meanings of words. Well, no, I don't, obviously, Joey. You know, because, you know, I'm sort of a nitpicker, and I guess I should qualify that I'm also a retired licensed professional counselor and addiction specialist, but I'm relieved to be away from that, because I have time with people I sponsor to hear a real fifth step where they tell their life story, rather than just reading, hiding behind a piece of paper that's their 4th step, and so that doesn't work for me. And of course, my experience in trying to be more faithful to myself or true to myself is to become more comfortable telling my entire life story wherever it's appropriate and necessary. And I mean, I just don't want to hide by, I don't have secrets anymore. And that's what's so important. Right. So any effort to try to encourage people to practice and adopt a program of recovery is so important. So what I talk about is I try emotional sobriety thing that Bill Walk talked about in the 12 and 12, the 12 step. At this point, we begin to practice all 12 steps on a daily basis so that we and those around us can find emotional sobriety. And I don't find that in most AA meetings. That's why I need to use the personal power that I have to take care of myself. I'm going to try to shut up, but just give me one last thing. 6 and 7 make a lot of sense to me because I say I become willing to let go of anything and everything holding me back. And right. That's what the first five steps prepare me for. But then 7 is, I think, essential. I use whatever personal power and resources I find to help me confront self-limiting liabilities and defenses when they crop up. And I need to use that every day. Those are the power steps. But where do I find the power? In conceding to my innermost self. That's what I call my, right. I hate using higher power, but my best self, whatever. Anyway, thanks. It's today is, and I always do this because they told me we do this shit one day at a time, just the way we live. It's day 15,828 because I didn't drink and I didn't die last night. And isn't that the point? So yes, thanks.
Yeah. real quick, in terms of having to translate Bill's, original things, we direct people to get a sponsor immediately because we think that the sponsor, an educated sponsor, or somebody who's got some background, that's the principal role, is to help them expand those and understand what's behind them. Because you get somebody, you get a young person particularly who they're just in the fog, they're in the fog and they read that and they need some defogging, and it helps to have that. Number two, you need to expand them to where you get to the principles underneath them. And that's what a sponsor can do. Well, and a secular sponsor, particularly to help translate and put it into principles that you can embrace without religion. As far as the allergy goes, when I use that term here, I don't believe it's an allergy either to, Brian's point earlier. I used that back then. The doctor use that term because back then they didn't know any better. They were digging at things, it's a disease, it's a allergy, it's a something. They know today, you're not going to roll around in the alcohol bush or whatever. I have a cat that rolls around in a catnip bush, but I know from just the history of things now, it's not an allergy as he said, but they were on the right track to think that there was some kind of biological component to addiction or something, DNA or something. And last, I love the secular rooms, particularly because I enjoy the different opinions and the controversy, because out of that comes a better perspective on the entire thing. We all win by hearing the alternatives and the alternative perspectives. That's largely what got us all here in the room, was embracing that you could do some secular recovery and finding some, homies, some people to hang out with that embrace your same point of view. So thanks to the ever grateful.
Hey, I find it really fascinating. The reason we called this Varieties of Secular Experiences for the very point you just brought up. There are varieties of secular experiences, just like there are varieties actually in what I call mainstream AA. I don't call it traditional because when I got sober 40 years ago, AA was very different than a lot of the AA is now, believe it or not. Joe, did you want to make any comments or questions? You'll have to unmute yourself.
I like a lot of the stuff you say that isn't particularly pertaining to the steps. And you talk about how AA encourages, sort of broader thinking, right? Getting away from our impulses and being more thoughtful in our approach and being able to hold an idea as a preference as opposed to the truth. Right. This is my sort of preferred way of looking at things, but I'm open to other ways of looking at things. I mean, we gotta meet people where they're at, I suppose. Are some people predisposed to be able to hold these abstract ideas and other people more predisposed to sort right. of reductionist or binary thinking? You know, it'd be easy to say this is the right way to go about it, but like, and that anyone could benefit from it, which I agree they could, but just in your experience of working with others, mm-hmm. you know, I think some super intelligent people are quite, you know, binary, and some super intelligent people are quite abstract. It has nothing to do with education or intelligence, I don't think, but some people are going to be inclined to the sort of more directive approach to recovery that you might get from a, you know, sort of CA muckers type meeting, and other people would just stay completely away from the steps and just, you know, their vitality comes from community and discussion and mm-hmm. all that sort of thing. So could you, and you talk a lot about that in the book, sort of off the topic of the steps, but if you could just sort of speak to that a little more, I'd appreciate it.
I can give you a little input. And the ever grateful Jeb would have seen a lot of this. Walking in the door is his role, and the role of, let's say, the important role of a sponsor or anybody, particularly around a newcomer, is to size up that person, I think, from where they fit on that spectrum you just described. And it has not to do with intelligence or anything. It's some people embrace a different model of change. And I think that part of the important role of a sponsor, AA or other programs of recovery, people or mentors, is sizing them up, Joe, for just what you said, so that you can walk them into the program with them in mind. Like, I know some young people I meet, they come in the door and they just love the structure. They don't mind that it's 12 steps and I'm going to meet with you every week and we're going to go through a step every week. And I say, you got to attend 3 meetings a week at least, and 90 meetings, and you know, we try to encourage the 90 and 90. And those people love the structure. They want simplicity. They don't want to be taken down the abstract path. And then other people, you know, you size them up and you spend a little bit of time with them, and we're already talking about the intersection of metaphysical thinking and, you know, and step 4. I'm making that up, but you know, they head down a whole different path. And I think I need to be willing as a sponsor to embrace that person too. And if they want to take a little more metaphysical walk down the steps, or a cycle, or a CBT walk down the steps, we can do that too. One thing you said that's very important to me, and that I cover in the section on the psychology of the steps in there, is at the center of modern psychology, regardless CBT or the other major fields, offshoots of that, is teaching a person to operate with preferences rather than predetermined beliefs and principles. Like, everybody's out to screw me, so every situation they go into, that's their starting point. Rather than coming from the point of pausing long enough to consider the preferences or to consider the alternatives in the situation and treating things as preferences. I would rather they not treat me like a nobody, but maybe this person treats everybody like a nobody or having preferences. So I try to encourage that thinking and to be flexible about the person walking in the door. Not stereotype addiction and not stereotype the path back, but use a formal program of recovery as the benchmark and framework to work from, so that at least we have a community of people operating on the same basis,
so that if we have to pass people off or a person moves, at least they got some foundation. I mean, I know based on this meeting, we have some foundation in Atlanta, Toronto, and California and Arizona and Detroit. So
thanks, Glenn. I want to ask you a couple of questions. One is a little technical, I guess. Talking about the sixth step, one of the phrases in the sixth step that's always kind of bugged me is where he says that our character defects have caused our alcoholism, which I don't really agree with. It may be that for some people that's true, but I think there's also a genetic and a biological component that has nothing to do with whether the defects caused the alcoholism or the alcoholism caused the defects. And the other thing I wanted to mention about principle is if you want people to only look at preferences, how does that jibe with most moral and ethical systems boil down to certain principles to guide behavior? So,
okay.
There they are.
Well, I can talk to both of those. I think the Bill Wilson of 1950, who introduced the concept of emotional sobriety and the next frontier, would be a different Bill Wilson than the 1930s Bill Wilson, let's say. And he would have that broader perspective. He would probably tell you that based on what I know now, there's probably some genetic components and also character, you know, maladies that result in things. And he would say my emotional immaturity and my attachment to others, and he would call those character defects, having attachments to others and unrealistic expectations of others, that's what he's referring to when he says that character defects are responsible. I know myself, I believe this to be true, my self-esteem issues, which they say in the big book are at the center of that, were caused by character maladies, you know, different perspectives I carried around in my character. Like I had, part of my character was I had to get opinions from others about my well-being. You know, I needed to look for clues as to my Glenness from, my goodness and Glenness from other people. So I think the later Bill would tell you that, you know, it would have a broader perspective maybe than the 30s Bill. I don't know if that addresses your question. And on the subject of principles, I think you can embrace a set of principles that guide you in your day-to-day as starting points, like the principle of being loving and kind rather than extracting and taking. For example, my starting principle would be, in the past would have been, I need to get in there, prove to them that I'm right. I mean, I don't think of that, but that's just the way. I need to prove I'm right. They need to validate that I'm right. I need to get a win out of this somehow. You know, I don't know, things like that. Well, today, the principles that I operate on, I'm Buddhist light, by the way. I draw a little bit of my Buddhism. I draw some principles out of the Four Noble Truths and Eightfold Path. And today I strive to be a more loving, kind person when I'm out there, more of a listening person is one of my principles, listening, being a softer, kinder, gentler Glenn. And so that would be my answer to the principles question. I think what you do is you arm yourself with a different set of starting principles rather than the ones I used in the past. And that's what some of the modern psychology tries to get you to do, is just arm yourself with a different set of things and be, what's the word, more cognitively flexible, to be a cognitive flexible person. Okay, that's what I have on that topic.
Do you have any closing remarks you'd like to make? We don't have any more hands up, so perhaps you.
Only that I enjoy doing this. I enjoy hearing your perspectives. Participating in the secular recovery community and spending time in the treatment centers and in traditional AA and listening to the different perspectives in that has made me a richer person and led me to putting myself in a position of actually having a book where I'm making a contribution, and you know, it's getting some legs. I'm not in it for the dough. I just love to hear the fact that people are out there reading it, maybe getting a little different perspective. It's not so. Thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you being here. It was great.
Thank you, Glenn.
And thank you, Glenn. I also want to, in closing, I want to thank Beyond Belief for providing the Zoom meeting room, which allows us to have more than 100 participants, although we didn't have that many today. I want to thank Kat and Kenji for watching the waiting room and the chat feature and all of that. And I wanted to mention that our next workshop on January 30th for Varieties of Secular Experience will feature three of our own members from Freethinkers Living Sober talking about the big book in secular AA. So I hope you'll join us then. And the way that we typically end these workshops and our meetings is by sharing the responsibility declaration. If you would like to, you're welcome to unmute. And who is responsible?
I am
responsible.
Anyone, anywhere, reach out for help. Let the hand of AA always be there. And for that,
I am responsible. Yeehaw. Thank you.